year, but it's really not DSC.
Dale Morrissey, Developmental Services Center. Good morning. I want to give you an update. Today, there's a very good chance there'll be the override attempt for the community living wage bill, so keep your fingers crossed. With the changes in elections, I don't know quite what to read. You know, I think I told you we had 8 targets to try to convert 4 votes last time, and we still need to convert those 4 votes and hope that the hard thing about that is all the Democrats need to show up, and that's very, very difficult in these, you know, because one there is, again, one vote not for the override. So I believe, you know, if you're guessing person, we'll get through the Senate, and the House is where we're going to have to watch real close. So there is a couple Republicans. I've spoke with a couple, I think, that really want to, but to vote for it, but they want it to be as part of a full package. And as I tell them, we can't wait for a full package. We've been waiting for 10 years with no rate increases, and to wait for a full package if we don't get this opportunity really sets us way back. And so we'll hope that happens. And just a different note that is not directly, but I thought it's important, is I've been working for the last couple of years informally as a consultant, and Janice McAteer also assisted me with the people down in Montgomery County, and they've been trying to form a 708 board, and we talked with them using some of the same principles as we created the Development Disability Board, and I just want to announce that they were successful. In this climate, it's really amazing that they were successful. They won by 206 votes last Tuesday, and that will generate $600,000 for Montgomery County and get them the opportunity to do things like you've been doing for the last nearly 15 years. So we're excited that that worked for them, and they're moving forward in the implementation, and now they got to work through the administrative structure because, of course, they're not near as sophisticated as we are here in Champaign County of how they're going to administer that and get that done.
They could contact our state association, because we have taken on a lot of new members who are new 708 and 377s and need that kind of technical support.
They've already had
they're
contact
involved.
With it, and so they're aware of that. So anyway, thank you very much.
Dr. Fowler, do you have any CCMHB input? Okay, moving on. Approval of board minutes. The minutes from the October 19th meeting are included. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second. Okay, the minutes are approved from the October 19th meeting. I have no comments today. Going to just move through, and I'm sure there'll be some discussion about some of our points. So we'll move on to Executive Director's Report. Lynn?
I think that I will also not have comments. I got some good advice yesterday about this is a great opportunity to practice my elevator speech, but it's not ready. So I'm very excited about the presentations today.
Chandra, putting you on the hot seat here. Do you have a report for us today?
I just wanted to update you, and I don't know if
Chandra, you're going to need to find a microphone.
Okay. Sorry about that. I did not know if I put it in my report, but I actually did a board training with Community Choices on last night. And it went really well. It actually went over the time that I thought it was going to go over, but everyone seemed to be very enthusiastic and really excited about moving forward.
Thank you. I just want to make one comment about your report.
Okay.
I was really pleased to see that you've been working with Linda Tortorelli regarding transition planning and that transition planning committee. It's really great that we're going to be moving forward with trying to find some direction for amping up that whole transition planning process. So,
and
you.
Actually, we're going to be having a meeting soon where we are going to get the stakeholders. What we did was actually solidified who would be on that team, because we wanted to make sure that it was balanced, not with too many providers, not with too many families. But one of the components that we're going to add is that we actually want to have a youth or an individual who's actually been through transition planning a part of that discussion as well.
Barbara Bresner. Is Barbara here?
She's right there.
Oh, there, right next to Chandra. I'm so used to seeing you sitting out there.
You all have the report as an addendum.
I did. Good morning. Okay. I think you all have my report, so I won't, go over that or anything. But just to, we did complete our evaluations from the 10th Annual Expo, and overall I think they were really good. We had good return on those. We did a participant evaluation, an exhibitor evaluation, and an artist evaluation from the Artistic Expressions Room. And a few things just to highlight. The exhibitors really liked the pipe and drape that we had this year, and so they felt that really made a difference with, being able to hear and just looking, the general look and professionalism of the expo, I think, was really enhanced by that. So they liked the great communication beforehand, and I have to, give a kudos to Jim Mayer, who did a lot of that this year, and so that was great. The entertainment was really good this year. Number of folks commented that it was a little loud, and so, it's kind of hard to adjust that. We did have a sound guy, but it's still kind of hard to deal with that, especially when you have a band going. But anyway, overall, I think the entertainment was enjoyed. Participants thought there was really good variety, great information. They felt that, there were some suggestions, I think, that we will definitely look into for this next year. They'd like more information on hearing, low vision, home modifications. That's something we had a few years ago, and we're kind of researching to see who in our community might be good with that we can kind of bring back into the next year's event. The artists were really thrilled with their room. Just the whole volunteers were awesome. We had a lot of volunteers, and they were great as usual. But just really went above and beyond. So I think that was wonderful. Our friends at Thrivent provided snacks and food in that room, and that was just really appreciated by the artists, I think. We are looking now for a new venue, unfortunately. Things were really good there. We fit nicely. It was great. But because the Fluid Event Center is being turned into a new venue, we are going to need a new venue. So we're kind of looking at that and very open to suggestions that anybody might have. We are a very large event, so in this community, that's difficult to come by. We were at Lincoln Square and moved from there because of the size and some other amenities that they didn't have. So we will be focusing heavy on that right now in the next couple of months so that we can secure something. I did want to mention the expo. Our website has been really helpful to a lot of, folks, and I appreciate your Lynn updating that and getting, working on that. We've had some inquiries through the website as well as through the expo of other communities wanting to do something like this. We have, I think, Springfield. There was somebody that is interested in doing something in Springfield. And it's kind of funny because years ago I went to one in Springfield to get some ideas, but evidently that one doesn't happen anymore. I don't know. So anyway, and then I have actually been working with a guy in Florida who just had his expo this past week. So I'm anxious to see how that went. So, you know, it's kind of neat that we're seeing things like that happen as a result. Yeah.
So I know that in searching for a new venue, you might end up with you might have to take a smaller space. And if that's true, there might not be the capacity to host the artists anymore. But I wanted to suggest that some of the agencies are really taking that on, taking on supporting artists and entrepreneurs individually. So I think that if that does happen, even though that's my favorite part of the expo, it might be time. It might be that this is the right time for that to happen.
You know, we're going to try to have as much of the expo as we can. It's going to depend on size and space available, certainly, but yeah.
Thank you, Barb. Agency information.
Good morning, Annette Becker from DSC. Dr. Brian Daig, the consultant that we've hired to work with us on our transition to more community-based services, was here a few weeks ago for the entire week. He went through the PATH process with us as an agency to help us identify both short-range and long-range goals to continue our PATH in that area. He was very impressed with where we're at and what we've done to date, and even mentioned the possibility of us presenting at their next transition conference in Vermont. So I always look forward to seeing Vermont in the fall. So that was very energizing, and he will actually be back in January, and we've timed his visit to coincide with one of these meetings. So if we want to include him at all, that would be great. Maybe we can talk about that. We also have identified an art space as kind of a step out into the community. We have started working with a group called Enactus, and it's a group of college students from the U of I who are in the business program. And we have three individuals who are starting their own business with the help of this group of very energetic students. And so they will start in this space, as well as hopefully other micro businesses that will be identified in the future as well. So we're pretty excited about that. And our hope would be that we could get that underway by spring. And then lastly, we have redirected one competitive employment specialist position to specifically working with people from our in-house programs to competitive employment, and we're pretty excited about that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Annette.
I'm Becca Obachowski from Community Choices. I wanted to just share with you guys sort of an exciting development we've had within our own customized employment department. We've started working with a new business that's coming to town. Scotty's Brew House is opening up on South Neal Street, and they actually approached us saying that they were interested in hiring between 10 and 15% of their workforce being folks with disabilities. So we, at this point, have they've hired four people that we work with, and I think of those four, three have already started, and they're in the training process, and it's going really well. So it's very exciting.
That's great. Thanks.
Hey, Becca, are they also offering to engage with other employers?
That's what they told us when we had our initial meeting with them, that they were interested in working with whoever was interested in working with them. So I think they're also somebody who is interested in being part of the LEAP process and going through that training. So they were this is something that they do kind of at all of their businesses. I think they're kind of, they're a chain, but sort of a more regional chain. So the, I forget the name of the manager that I spoke with at this moment, but he was very excited. He thought it was a very, interesting and kind of nice thing that very, worked very well, much in parallel with, what they are, trying to do within their business, was excited that we had that available in this community.
Okay, moving on to the financial report. I'm going to move that we approve the claims as presented in the packet.
Second.
Aye. Agreed? Do we have to voice vote? Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, approved. Okay, new business. We have a presentation today from University of Illinois students who've been working on various projects through the Community Learning Lab, and they're here to present the results. Welcome.
So we have three different groups, and this is Ashley, and she's going to give you some information about their project that they've done. They've worked with me to do two trainings on effective collaboration and effective ethical communication. And it's three of them in their group. The other two ladies had to work this morning and had other commitments. But the other ladies will actually be at the meeting for this afternoon and will give you an outline and an overview of what they did.
So first I'll talk about the first presentation we'll be doing on November 28th, which is on ethical communication, and we'll talk about what ethical communication is as well as what it is not, and we'll also talk about gossip in the workplace and what ethical communication looks like on the level of leadership within staff and with a client as well. And then our second presentation will be more workshop based, and that's going to be on effective collaboration, and we'll discuss what effective collaboration is, the fundamentals of collaboration, efficiency versus effectiveness, the barriers that come along with effective collaboration, and effective collaboration on the individual level with organizations and within a system as well, and creating collaborative plans. I hope to see many of you guys there.
So my name is Brian Summers, and I am actually from Urbana, and I'm a senior at the School of Social Work, and I have been working on putting together a resource guide for rural Champaign County. I was really interested in this project because I'm from Champaign-Urbana, but I haven't really spent that much time in the rural parts of the area, so I was really interested in kind of learning more about resources involved with that, so that's kind of why I chose this project. So my partner and I, Ashley, different Ashley than this one. She couldn't make it today. She's going to be at the later meeting. We kind of started this process by using Chandra as a big resource. We kind of weren't really sure how to go about this. So she really put us in the right direction, sent us to the Disability Resource Expo, which is a really, really awesome opportunity for me. We spoke with, I think, around 75 people or something at that. So we spoke to literally every single booth, as Chandra asked us to do. So we've included most of that information here, at least all of the information that we kind of thought would be important. But I was really nervous initially about this because I wasn't sure how I was going to get a lot of this information. We looked online and we kind of covered the gaps that we saw online. But one thing that we realized once we got to the Resource Expo is that there actually are tons of resources that just people don't really know about. So what we did is we kind of highlighted those resources in here. And what you guys have in front of you is, or what you all have in front of you is a very, very loose, rough draft of what we have so far. But we're hoping to kind of clean it up a little bit, take out the stuff that we don't really find necessary from Chandra's input, and just clean it up a little bit and make it look a little bit nicer. But I think this is going to be a really strong resource for the community. I think it's going to be really, really good for many years to come because there's lots of things in here that many people that I know who have many developmental disabilities and things like that didn't even know about, just kind of like interacting with them and talking to them. So, yeah, I think this is going to be an awesome thing to have for the community, and I'm really hoping that it can be a valuable resource.
And one thing I just wanted to point out is, in addition, and he probably forgot to do this, I connected them with 211. And on the 211 system, they noticed that there were gaps. And so hopefully the sustainability will that we will provide this information to 211 so that it'll be the gaps that they can begin to fill as well.
I'm pushing the wrong button. Brian, this when we started the Disability Resource Expo, it was because we were looking for information like this. And every year when I go to the expo, I see something really new that I didn't know anything about. A list like this, a few years ago, people would have just died to have this. So I appreciate you doing this, and I think that you're right. I think that a lot of people will be able to use this. Agencies are wonderfully helpful. But if that's all you know, just a list of agencies, it's not enough. So this is very good. Thanks.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to work with the Champaign County Mental Health Board, and I really look forward to putting this project in motion and kind of seeing the final product.
Question. Brian?
Yeah.
Have you thought about this is a list of at this moment in time? How is this going to be maintained? Who's going to be the gatekeeper? Is it Chandra or is it us? Who's going to update this each year as things change?
So that's a good question. One of the things that we talked about is, and that was like our first challenge, like oftentimes resource books don't get updated. And so with the 211, they update their information each year, making sure that it's up to date. So that was our one way of sustainability. In addition, we do the resource guide with the DD, with the expo, the disability expo, that's updated every year. And then in addition, I'm a part of the Human Services Council. They also have a guide. There's a lot of different sources of information that are happening. And so what I think that me being on these different committees, my responsibility is to pass information on, and that's a definite way that you can sustain it. But our definite way of looking at how it would be continuously updated is utilizing 211.
Chandra's right about the expo resource book. All of these are within there, but they're not sorted. You can't really sort per a service that you're seeking. It's organized by alphabet. So when I had to update the site because we had a problem with the hosting service, and then we needed to get the new information in there. So even on our website, you can only really look alphabetically. And a person came to our office the other day with a very specific, very serious need, and I had the resource book, but it took a long time to help her, even with the book. So I wonder if a subsequent student project could be to create a different kind of website for us where it's sortable, where a person could could query for a particular need or location. And this was really important to us for a different reason, in, you know, just knowing that there are people who have to look at services where they live. And some people live quite far away from the services that are most well advertised. So thank you really for doing this. And I think we could propose a second, like a next semester student project to develop a more usable tool.
I'm interested in how you foresee this being distributed to people. But where would someone go to get this information?
So that's actually something we spoke about a great deal in some of our meetings. We would love to have a paper copy, kind of like the Disability Resource Expo Guide. We want to have something that's really pretty, something that looks really nice that people can kind of take home with them, maybe if they come to the Chamber County Mental Health Board or something like that, or the Brookings Center. But we were really hoping that it could just be kind of an online resource, and I think that would make it also really easy to update very quickly. With the paper one, really it could be outdated really in one day. I mean, there could be new additions and new companies and new organizations that are in the community and stuff like that. So what I think we would really like to do is have it be online. And I know that could be potentially difficult for some people without internet access or computer access or something like that. So I think initially we'd like to have a paper copy or edition, and then kind of shift to the online while kind of keeping maybe an updated one maybe every year, every 6 months, something like that.
We have places we can post this. Mm-hmm. So
if you just have this, and or if Chandra has this and shares it, we can post it to a few different places so that's settled. And then if you have suggestions for improving the presentation or pointing people to it in a different way, we can continue that.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I was going to mention, too, that, you know, when we set up the expo each year, we do categorize the exhibitors, you know, by, you know, legal and, you know, support services and so on. So we do have a listing that way as well that Jim puts together every year of the exhibitors that are there. Now, that doesn't pick up the ones that maybe aren't there this year but were last year. But going through, like, previous resource books, you could gather that information as well. So if you need any of those, I'm happy to provide those.
Definitely. Thank you.
I also want to note that, Barb, we did utilize the actual sheet, the map, that broke it down. And then one of the things that we found out was that in health organizations, there were health. So Prairie Center was considered under health. But some people may not know that there are substance abuse. So we actually took it and broke it down even more from there. Well, we as the students were working. I was with them.
Providing strong supervision. Thank you all.
Thank you. I want to introduce Tori, Maggie, and Brooke from the U of I, and they've done some anti-stigma research. There's a handout in front of you.
Okay, so as Stephanie told you, we did some research on anti-stigma efforts throughout basically the country, and then we did a quick survey on Ebertfest. I'm Brooke.
I'm Tori.
And I'm Maggie. Okay, there we go. Okay, so just go ahead. Oh, and I also want to include that everything in this presentation is in the final report that you have in front of you. So that's why you don't actually have a copy of the presentation, because that would be a bit redundant to give you two copies. So. Okay, so in 2014, the Census Bureau concluded that in the United States there are 37,874,571 non-institutionalized individuals living with a disability. This accounts for about 12% of the total population. And on the Census Bureau, the website listed the different disabilities that they're categorized as hearing difficulties, vision difficulties, cognitive, ambulatory, and self-care, and then independent living as well. And then throughout the country, counties have instated mental health boards to help provide services and also to address stigma against people with disabilities. So our project is in Champaign County. The Census Bureau told us that there's an estimated 208,861 population as of July 1st of last year. Of that population, 5.7% have a disability, which is about 12,000 people here in this county. So what the Mental Health Board asked us to do is kind of do some research to find out what these counties are doing for better visibility and less stigma. So we contacted 31 counties and a commission, but Tori will tell you more about that, and to find out what they're doing about their anti-stigma efforts.
Okay, yeah, so we met about a month ago, I guess, now, or a little over that. Is this on? Okay, cool. And so we looked at originally the anti-stigma outreach in mainly counties in Illinois, but then we also contacted some counties on the East Coast, and also Brooke contacted some counties in California, but ended up finding out that they had like a California State Commission. And so we, unfortunately, our response rate was very low, and so that was a little concerning. We also found out that, like, a lot of these websites didn't have websites. A lot of these counties didn't have websites, or they didn't have any contact information to contact someone to ask them about the outreach that they were doing. So that was a little bit it was definitely a limitation that we had. So what we did after we found the answers and, you know, we were compiling the data, we realized that there was kind of three main categories, and those were counties that didn't document any efforts, that either didn't respond to us or didn't have a website, or just really didn't have anything specifically for anti-stigma, and this is also for disabilities and mental health, just flat out didn't have anything or didn't respond. And then there was the counties that had efforts described, which were Delaware, Allegheny, Lancaster, and Joe Davies County, and they responded to us, or they forwarded us to their website, and we were able to see, like, they had like an annual report, and so we were able to kind of figure out what they were doing. But it wasn't, we weren't quite sure how they were implementing it. It was kind of vague. And finally, counties that had like clear efforts in implementation are were Piatt County, Macomb, the California Commission, DeKalb, and Oak Park. We got responses from all of them, and they were very helpful in discussing what they're doing. And so we were able to kind of document that also in the thing. And then you guys last time asked me what DeKalb was doing, and so we reached out to her, and she contacted us back, and she was very helpful. And so one of the things she was saying was that they were made a, they were working with A Hope for the Day, an organization based out of Chicago that focuses mainly on anti-stigma outreach with suicide. And so we thought that that would be, like, kind of a cool resource, like, with partnering with an organization that specifically is looking at anti-stigma. So that could be a resource. I just wanted to follow up because you asked me to do that. So I don't know if you have any other questions, you can talk about that. So.
Okay. And then what this is talking about right here is last time also there was a request to kind of get a better sense of the demographics in each individual county. So the chart that's in this PowerPoint, you can find it on page 11 in the packet. And page 10 before it is kind of a better summary of the little bit of information I have on this slide. But basically, the three demographics that I looked at was population size of the county, the estimation of that population that has a disability of some kind, and the land area of the county in square miles. And I included these demographics because the population size and the percentage of that population that has a disability is important, because I think it might have a factor on the kinds of services they have or the amount of services they have. And I think the size of the county is important because it shows whether or not there might be individuals who have trouble accessing. So if it's a more condensed county, they might be able to reach the services than if it's a more widespread county. And finally, I also included, you can't quite see it in the picture, but on the actual chart, there are little asterisks next to certain counties. That's denoting that they are, by the Census Bureau's definition, a rural county. And I feel like that might have some importance, too, on the services that they have access to.
Okay, so then to get a better feel for who is attending EbertFest, we conducted a survey, and that survey asked what the participants' ages, name, or age, gender, their highest level of education, household income, race, length of time they've lived in Champaign. It then included a quick excerpt of like what EbertFest is, and then asked if they had attended, if they've heard of it, and if they have heard of it but not attended, why not? And then one last little comment box for any other anti-stigma efforts that they've heard of in the area. So then I'll just do a quick rundown of the survey responses because this is all included in the packet. We obtained 149 respondents. The respondents were fairly representative of the demographics of Champaign County, according to the census. The average age of our respondents was 27 years old, and however, we did have far more females than we did males, so that does make it a little different than Champaign County. You can go to the next one. The most represented level of education was a bachelor's degree, and the highest income was $50,000 to $74,000. And Champaign County's average is $46,000, so possibly slightly above, but pretty close to representative. The races that responded were actually almost the exact breakdown of that of Champaign County. And the Champaign County demographics are included also in the packet, so you can kind of do a quick comparison of that. And then there, of the 149, 83 have heard of EbertFest, and however, only 18 reported that they have attended. I included some of the most frequent why they have not attended. That being scheduling conflict, finances, childcare. Some people just stated that they weren't interested. And actually, this was a pretty frequent response as well, that they did not know that it was an anti-stigma event. So I think that that was kind of telling. Next one. And then the question asked if you've heard of any other mental health or anti-stigma events in the area, and the Disability Expo was by far the most responded event, so that's really good. And then there were three others that they said that they've heard of, like resources from Women's Resource Center, Prairie Center, and the NAMI Walk. So then yeah, that was really great to hear. So basically, we then took from the data and wanted to know, like, what is this data telling us? So basically, I took apart the data and kind of looked for trends within it. There's a chart within the handout that breaks down this a little bit better visually, but we found that essentially, regardless of the amount of time that someone's lived in Champaign County, very few have attended EbertFest. So as you can like see on the slide, with the exception of those that reported that they've lived in the county for more than 25 years, most had said that they had not attended, but that they have heard of it, so that's good. And that the average age of those that have attended EbertFest was 38.3 years old. So this could be correlated with age, but that can't be determined since we didn't really ask more questions about that. So overall, the survey results could indicate that the Ebert Film Festival may not be reaching the entirety of Champaign County. We've seen that we saw that the younger respondents had not attended the festival, and that it also showed that those attending EbertFest tended to have report a higher income. So then we kind of looked at like what could next steps be to maybe understand this a little bit more. So we thought that it might be beneficial to give a survey to those that are actually attending EbertFest 2017, getting their county, their income, things like that, seeing if they, you know, are traveling from out of state, out of the county, just to better get an actual representation of who is attending the fest. And then we are continuing to obtain survey results, but I wanted to cut it off Tuesday morning because we just keep getting them in. So it was ever-changing data, and I was like, I just need to make these graphs. So as we get more respondents, I'll definitely give them to Stephanie for her to relay to you guys. Yeah, and then that's all that we have.
Well, actually, I'm going to direct this question to Lynn. Thank you so much for the report. I'm just wondering, what does the DD Mental Health Board invest in Ebert Fest on an annual basis?
It's 42.15% of the total investment, which the cost to sponsor a film, which is what we've been doing, is $25,000. And then for several years, we did additional activities. So the amount of money approved for it has been $30,000 in order to support additional activities too. So their piece is $13,000 something. Is that right? 13.6 something like that.
But isn't that also chopped down by the amount of support that we get?
Yes.
So we really don't have $13,000. Correct. We have about $7,000.
Well, it depends on how on the revenue that we get back, which varies a lot each year. So there are other members who make a contribution, typically about $500 each, and then some people purchase passes. So we have in some years gotten back half of it, but last year not that much.
Isn't it about $6,000-some last year?
Yeah, it was less last year than it had been. And that's agencies feeling the pinch, I think, not contributing.
I do have one other thing. Now, did I understand that you are going to continue your survey into next year's Ebert Fest, and you will be able to tell us of the attendees? How many of them are aware that stigma is a part of the Ebert Fest?
No. So actually, the survey that we conducted will go through the end of this semester. So about like December 16th is probably when I'll send. I'll shut down the survey because it's online. And give that all that information to Stephanie. I won't be here very much longer, so and actually none of us will be, but I think that would be something that would be really beneficial to the Mental Health Board and Disability Board to know who is attending, and maybe that could be something that like a student group could conduct next year. Just that way, I mean, we just kind of sent it out. We sent it out to agencies. I know that it was sent to Prairie Center, CYFS. Choices, I think, received some. And there was one more that I can't remember the name of the agency that it was sent to, as well as just, like, students on campus and kind of by word of mouth. And it's also currently at CU at Home. So, like, kind of an untapped population that may not have the resources to go to this kind of event. So I think that it would be really interesting to see who is actually attending Ebert Fest, since we're just getting most of the respondents said that they had not attended. So, yeah.
I think what we're looking for is what are we getting for our money?
Mm-hmm.
How much of our $6,000 or $7,000 that we're paying out, how much information are we passing on to the general public?
Right.
And is there a better way to spend $6,000 or $7,000 and get more information out? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say one of the things that we did differently this year is when we actually went to the committee chair, because the leadership actually changed, we actually got free tickets to our sponsoring film. In the past, they hadn't done that before. And so we actually provided them to, and that was in my report a few months ago, actually provided free tickets 2-hour sponsored film for people to attend that would not have normally been able to go. And so I think that that was one of the barriers that I saw personally coming into this position, that there were people interested in attending but didn't know that you could go and actually purchase tickets on that day. They saw that long line and were really intimidated. And so what I chose to do was meet with the festival director, not the festival director, but Casey?
She's a coordinator. And that we really did start to see some flexibility when Casey took that job.
Yeah, so when Casey took the job, we saw the flexibility and the need to be able to provide that outreach where we had heard people weren't able to come.
To the next step that might be more relevant to what your investment is doing in the theater, we had talked in the past about pre-tests and post-tests associated with a film, and thought this is it's challenging for the agencies who host these big walk events to get people to fill out forms. And so, you know, Barb Bresner has generated a beautiful set of evaluations, but they have over the last 10 years kind of made a science of getting people to fill out the forms and then be rewarded for filling out the forms. So we have this really good and pretty comprehensive evaluation piece with that project. We have no evaluation piece with the anti-stigma event in the spring. And so to design it and tell us how to manage something like that, like how do you get people when they're standing in line to fill out a form, might be a student project for a semester in itself. Just designing that for us.
Okay, moving on to integration transition successes. Do we have any?
Good morning, Annette Becker again from DSC. We have a very active self-advocacy group, and we've had it, we've supported it for several years. But just to give you some examples from the Employment Services Program, when we are interviewing for staff positions, self-advocates are part of the interview process when we're hiring. And then also for annual employee performance reviews, we also include self-advocate information in those annual performance reviews. So they're very involved in the support that they receive. Every year we support 12 to 15 people to attend the self-advocacy summit. And this year a group of 3 to 4 self-advocates gave a presentation on being a self-advocate and how to get the support that you need from your direct service people. And it was so well received that they have been asked to give that same presentation in 2 different places across the state. And so they'll be taking the dog and pony show on the road. So we're pretty excited about that, as were they. It was, again, a lot of very good feedback from not only other self-advocates who were there, but also service providers and direct service people who attended. They just thought it was very well done.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, in your packets, page 15 is Joyce's letter to the editor. Thank you very much for that really articulate letter, Joyce. Okay, for information, the first quarter to FY17 agency service activity reports are included in the packet. It's quite lengthy. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Anything to contribute?
I guess I'm wondering if this is useful to you all. This was an idea that I got from another. It was a 708 board, but they have similar responsibilities elsewhere in the state. They said that they just put the agency's quarterly reports directly into board packets so that board members could see them quickly, not summarized, not editorialized. So we've been doing this now for a year, and I don't know if it's really helpful to you all. It's fairly easy for us to do it because we print them out anyway in order to review. But this year I added to it that summary. It's not super easy to read, but it is a subset of a spreadsheet that I created for both board to describe both boards' investments for the contract year 17. So I thought that was hopefully would show you what we're comparing the quarter results to for each program. So I don't know. If it's not helpful, if it's just too much paper, we can stop doing it, but
I think it's good information to have. Information is always good. Okay. Moving into old business, we have a number of items in a row here that are kind of reboots of information that's been provided in the past month or so and will appear again in packets, some of it. The first item is our draft FY18 allocation criteria. A briefing memorandum has been included on that. If there are any comments or questions on that, please speak up. Otherwise, we will move on. B is the draft three-year plan. Again, a briefing memorandum has been included on that item. And the next, any questions or comments? Item C is an assessment of needs, beginning on page 58. And then D is multi-year contracting. That memorandum is on page 84 to 87. Lynn, do you have any comments about that, about multi-year contracting?
You're right. All of these will appear in your December board packet as decision memoranda because the funding priorities pretty much need to be finalized before we open the application system for agencies to start applying under those priorities. So that first one is important. The second one is our three-year plan that also, because the objectives are effective January 1st, that December meeting will be the best time to approve that. There are changes. Each time I'm presenting them to you, I'm presenting them with changes based on comments that we've received so far, which I've found to be really helpful. The briefing memo on needs assessment is not, you won't see that again, but it was based on a question that I thought was important, and I wanted to be able to look at the information all in one place myself and thought you might like it too. The Independent Service Coordination Unit, which you contracted with last year for a little bit deeper unmet needs assessment than we can take from the PUNS data, is presented here. I think it's presented in its entirety, and then I summarized pieces of it, and I thought that was probably the most useful tool that I've seen. So I wanted you to see that. This last briefing memo can come back to you as a decision memo, or we can stop. If this isn't really resonating with you, for us to put it's a very small set of current year contracts, which could be put onto a two-year contract term, just simply adding a second year of funding and asking the agencies to update all of the forms before June 26th, I think. So they still have some updating to do, but they would not have to reapply for the program in February. So if you like this idea, we'll bring it back in December for a decision, but I'm curious if you want me to keep moving it.
I have two pieces. I kind of swing both ways. One, I understand why it's necessary and needed that some programs are going to last longer than 1 year, and being able to give the agencies assurance that there will be funds there for them, I'm sure makes it easier and makes it makes for a better program. However, when you make a commitment in year one that carries to year two, you're committing about what you're going to spend when you don't know what your revenue is. Mm-hmm. So I think I would say please be cautious in determining which of these you would apply to a two-year thing, because it's one thing to tell someone, congratulations, you have $100,000 this year and $100,000 next year, except next year it may be $80,000, but it could be $110,000, you know. And so that kind of is a double-edged sword, because it makes it more difficult for them to plan. So I'm not saying we should never, ever have multi-years, but I am saying that I don't think we should have too many multi-years.
Mental Health Board point of view, one of the reasons we talked about moving to two-year contracts is to reduce the amount of decision-making on an annual basis, because there are about 60 contracts, and that some are very similar from year to year. You're right, we don't always know what the next year's budget's going to be, but if we have a trend line that's fairly level, then we were hoping to be able to prioritize attention on an alternating year basis to programs, so that when people get the 60, they sometimes stop before they read the second or the third or the fourth. So it was partly a management response, too, to enable the board members to truly study the number of proposals. So slight difference between the DD board and the mental health board in terms of numbers, but I just wanted to bring that up. And, of course, it is really important to know what the trend is over time with the funding levels, because if it's at all ragged, then that would come into play. Thank you.
Linda, you have a sense of what particular programs would be seeking multi-year and maybe a percentage of revenue?
Unfortunately, I have not included the amounts, but they're actually in this other table, so I could get them. We asked agencies back in August if they might be interested in a two-year term. And so of the responses, Mark and I talked about the programs which we tend to fund every year and which tend to be relatively unchanged and which also tend not to have compliance issues. That's important to us, too. And then, so we had a little bit larger subset at the first draft of this, and then I took out a couple of contracts which I thought could be affected by changes in the healthcare reimbursement systems. Now, I say that every year about these couple of programs, and it never happens, so I'm probably being an alarmist. But so this subset that's presented here of five contracts, we felt like were pretty safe bets for just taking a second year term. But I did not write the amounts in there, and I could work on that right now if you want. It's not...
I don't need to know at the moment. And okay. Does anybody else feel compelled to know an exact figure now?
The other thing is, Susan makes an important point that the size of your job in April to review evaluations and to review our evaluations of the applications is really different from what the Mental Health Board is looking at. So if this is not a particularly pressing consideration for you, I can just tuck this idea away for next year, and we'll just leave our allocation process as it is. Two-year contracting is available in the funding guidelines, and people can apply for that. So,
I think that Susan makes a great point. Where we look at maybe, 20 or 25, mm-hmm. they're looking at 40 or 50, And so that makes a bigger difference for them than it does for us. But it doesn't mean that we have to walk tandemly in terms of things. Right. So they can make the decision to do that, and we can make the decision not. But, again, I think for me the decision comes more down to we have experienced what, if you remember a few years ago when we had a $100,000 drop. Mm-hmm. Well, that did affect agencies all across. And so it would affect them more if we had already committed dollars that we couldn't deal with. And mm-hmm. so then agencies who didn't have the two-year contracts, if they're in the second year, mm-hmm. would get even less of what than what we'd had. So that's my caution and only caution with regard to 2 years. Thank you.
I would actually be inclined to take this off the table. If that's okay with you, I thought it might present a nice benefit to you and maybe a convenience to the agencies as well, but it is really a small set of contracts. So.
Okay, moving on, Employment First update. Do no news today, or?
Okay. I'm afraid you're getting as tired of hearing my voice as I am. We've already talked about Dr. Degg's visit, and one other small thing. We have contracted with Griffin and Hammes to provide a 3-day. Presentation on customized employment, and that will be the middle of February, and that will be open to school vocational people as well as adult service providers.
Thank you. Scylla update, is there any news to share?
Sorry, I don't have anything. Sometimes that means it's good, but I'm sorry. I forgot to ask them. I'm very sorry about that.
So, do you have it?
No news.
Okay, a meeting schedule is in the back of the packet on page 88 for information. Okay, and the last item under old business, the Ligas Family Advocate Program acronym sheet is provided on page 91 and 92, a list of useful acronyms compiled and published by the Ligas Family Advocacy Program. Good information.
I think it just pointed out to me how difficult it is to chart, to understand, and to remember the information that we get regarding this area. I mean,
mm-hmm. And just when you think you know them, they change them. That's the other that's the other end of that. Okay, other board announcements. Okay, at this point there is other business, and the DDB is planning to move into closed session. Closed session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120-2C1. I'd like to consider a motion, or I'll read the motion, offer a motion to consider the employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of an employee of the Champaign County Mental Health Board and the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. The closed session shall include members of the CCDDB and Ms. Lynn Canfield. Stephanie, we need a roll call.
Did you want to add Susan to that motion?
No, she does not. Okay. No. I guess I called for a motion, so we need a second.
Mm-hmm. Second.
And then the roll call.
David Happ.
Aye.
Mike Smith. Deb Roush.
Aye.
Joy Still.
Aye.
We will move into closed session.